get in the thick of what God's wanting to say to us and what He's wanting to do. And just join us in the reading of it. 1 Kings chapter 18. I'm going to read a rather lengthy reading. I want to ask you just to be reminded of the fact that this really happened. It's easy when you come to a story like this or a text like this just to pass over it, and it's a noble story. It's worthy in intent and content, but somehow it's idolized or idealized to the point that it didn't really happen. How many times have you talked about the New Testament Christians, and the idea seems to come out from everybody as they think and talk and discuss that, yes, but those people were walking with Jesus in the flesh. Well, friends, as far as that's concerned, we have a better opportunity than they do, because He's not out there, He's in here. And this really happened. Let me ask you just to be mindful of that. Now, having said that, let me ask you to project yourself into the story. If you can't do any better than this, just stand by and watch like you were there, edge of Mount Carmel, and you're watching. Now, John's been there. I've been there. Maybe others here tonight have been there on Mount Carmel or by Mount Carmel. We saw the place where it projects up and outwards right to the edge of the Mediterranean Sea. When it drops off rapidly and runs the edge of the mountain. The foot of the mountain runs right down practically to the waters of the Mediterranean Sea. At any point when you're coming from inland toward this, you see the mountain as it's just like that. It has a knoll up on the top, right at the front. And it moves just about like that. And then right there is the Mediterranean Sea. And you look through a gap here from any distance way back in the inland, and you can see the Mediterranean as the mountain drops off. It was right up here on this mountain. That's where the water came from, incidentally. That's where the water came from for dousing that altar. It came from the Mediterranean Sea, in all likelihood. Now, we're not sure, but that's probably where it came from. After all, a drought was on, and it wasn't easily accessible. And all they had to do was come down the mountain. Right there was the Mediterranean Sea, and bring that water back up. And I want to begin reading this evening with verse 17. It's a little bit lengthy, and I'm going to ask you to give the license to your imagination to imagine the story and project yourself into it. And it came to pass, this is 1 Kings 18:17. It came to pass, when Ahab saw Elijah, that Ahab said unto him, Art thou he that troubleth Israel? And he answered, I have not troubled Israel, but thou and thy father's house, in that ye have forsaken the commandments of the Lord, and thou hast followed Balaam. Now therefore send and gather to me all Israel unto Mount Carmel, and the prophets of Baal 450, and the prophets of the groves 400, which eat at Jezebel's table. So Ahab sent unto all the children of Israel, and gathered the prophets together unto Mount Carmel. And Elijah came unto all the people and said, How long halt ye between two opinions? If the Lord be God, follow Him. But if Baal, then follow him. Now let me quickly repeat. In Elijah's mind, one of the possibilities was not an opinion. It was a reality. It was a fact. He was accommodating them, wavering between two possibilities, when he used the word opinions. How long halt ye between two opinions? And when he said, if the Lord be God, there was no real if in Elijah's mind. He was completely in accommodation to the people. If the Lord be God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him. And the people answered him not a word. Then said Elijah unto the people, I only, remain a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. Let them therefore give us two bullocks. And let them choose one bullock for themselves, and cut it in pieces, and lay it on wood, and put no fire under. Now, if you have a pencil and you're taking notes, and wouldn't mind, would you please underline that little phrase right there, put no fire under. I think this is the greatest lesson the church needs to learn today. That we need to stop depending on everything else except divine fire. We've arrived at a day where we're so affluent in the church that if the program doesn't work, we look to the budget. If the budget doesn't work, we look to the program. And if one person can't do it, we look to another. Where is God in all this? This is putting false fire on the altar. And we've arrived at the time where all of our human manipulations are replacing God, where all of our committee meetings are sometimes thrust into place because we can't bring ourselves just to a bare faith in God. with nothing propping us up. He said, put no fire under. And I'll dress the other bullock and lay it on wood and put no fire under. That's the second time he said that. And call ye on the name of your gods, and I'll call on the name of the Lord. And the God that answereth by fire, let him be God. And all the people answered and said, it's well spoken. You see, they really were undecided. And Elijah said unto the prophets of Baal, choose you one bullock for yourselves, and dress it first, for ye are many, and call on the names of your God, the name of your gods, but put no fire under. Why does he keep repeating that? Because that's the greatest danger always facing us in the things of God, to substitute our own fire. And call on the name of your gods, but put no fire under. I want you to know there's no trick going to take place here. No human ingenuity is going to produce what's about to take place here. Only God can do it. And if your Baal can't do it, my God can't do it, we'll just go home with a wet altar. But I want you to know that I believe my God can do it, he says. Put no fire under. And they took the bullock which was given them, and they dressed it and called on the name of Baal from morning even until noon, saying, O Baal, hear us. But there was no voice nor any that answered. And they leaped upon the altar which was made. And it came to pass at noon that Elijah mocked them and said, cry aloud, for he is a God. Now, I'm not going to tell you what this literally says next. If you want to know, you're going to have to get you a good modern translation. It wouldn't do in mixed company. The Bible is an earthy book. It gets right down to where we are. Cry aloud, for he is a God. Either he's talking or he's pursuing. I won't tell you the way that reads. Or he is pursuing, or he's in a journey, or peradventure he sleepeth and must be awaked. And they cried aloud and cut themselves after their manner with knives and lancets till the blood gushed out upon them. And it came to pass when midday was past, and they prophesied until the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice, that there was neither voice nor any to answer nor any that regarded. And Elijah said unto all the people, come near unto me. I want to take all the possibilities of camouflage off this. I want you to watch me carefully so you'll know I didn't produce this. Elijah is saying, come near unto me. And all the people came near unto him. And he repaired the altar of the Lord that was broken down. And Elijah took 12 stones according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob, unto whom the word of the Lord came, saying, Israel shall be thy name. And with the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord. And he made a trench about the altar as great as would contain 2 measures of seed. And he put the wood in order and cut the bullock in pieces and laid him on the wood and said, fill 4 barrels with water and pour it on the burnt sacrifice and on the wood. And he said, do it the second time. And they did it the second time. And he said, do it the third time. And they did it the third time. And the water ran round about the altar. And he filled the trench also with water. And it came to pass at the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice that Elijah the prophet came near and said, Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and of Israel. Let me remind you what that means. As the God of Abraham, he's the God of revelation. He revealed himself to Abraham. Abraham responded. As the God of Isaac, he's the God of redemption. He's the God of redemption. Isaac is the epitome of the Old Testament sacrifice brought back to life again. As the God of Israel, he's the God of regeneration. It's in Jacob, Israel, in whom more preeminently, predominantly than anywhere in the Old Testament, you see God's revealed power to transform human beings. Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and of Israel, let it be known this day that thou art God in Israel, and that I am thy servant, and that I have done all these things at thy word. Hear me, O Lord, hear me, that this people may know that thou art the Lord God, and that thou hast turned their heart back again. Now listen to the first line in verse 38. Then, and that word then, of course, has a time factor to it, a time sequence. Then the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt sacrifice and the wood and the stones and the dust and licked up the water that was in the trench. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and they said, the Lord, he is the God. The Lord, he is the God. And Elijah said unto them, take the prophets of Baal,